is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, two NFL preseason games coming up tonight as we kick off the preseason finale weekend. Roster cuts will be upon us. Starting jobs cemented and the regular season getting underway 2 weeks from today as we welcome you into this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And a couple of news items coming through this morning, Michael. The Commanders with a rare interdivision trade with the Philadelphia Eagles sending Jahan Dotson their way.
Yeah, that's a shocker. Anytime you trade, this is the second time they've done it. They've done it on draft day, too. You know, they let the Eagles move up in the draft. So you have to be really short of your evaluation of the player that you want to see twice a year. You want to see him twice a year and be prepared for the fact if he's successful, you look bad. Adam Peters, the general manager of the Washington Commanders, must really feel good about his evaluation of Dotson, which is only 2 years, 11 touchdowns. He's got a below 50% success rate, which is concerning for an outside receiver. And I think ultimately the biggest question you have to ask, Normie, is why would you give up on a young player like this who's got decent production? Now, understanding they threw the ball all over the lot last year, but has decent production. You have 3 more years minimum with him under contract, potentially 4. You've got 2 more years, and then you have the option, and then you have the franchise if you wanted to do that. So why would you give up on a player at 4 years at economic value for a pick that's going to be somewhere between 90 and 96? Something's missing here. Now, everybody's praising the Eagles for the trade, which on paper it looks good, right?
Yeah.
He's the 5th option for the Eagles. He's not going to be asked. He's never going to get double teamed. He's never going to have a lot of the best corner on him. So that works in his favor. But something's missing here. I'm not sure what it is. But look, the Washington Commanders feel very secure. The other trade Washington made, and I think this has been going on for a while, is remember they signed Brandon McManus from Jacksonville this offseason as a kicker. He got into the dispute with Jacksonville over a sexual harassment charge on the airplane. They cut him immediately. They traded for Riley Patterson, and now they just traded for Cade York, the young man from LSU who was a high draft pick of the Browns who never quite got into gear with the Browns, but he has great talent. So this field goal kicking situation in Washington is yet to be resolved.
Okay, yeah, good note there, Michael. And with your point about Jahan Dotson, it's very interesting because, yeah, like you say, the Eagles really liked their evaluation on the player, continue to add depth to the receiving core. You have like a pretty solid third option there. God forbid, a Brown or Smith gets injured. He's somebody that you feel has the capability to step in there for number 16 overall pick. But why would Washington be so willing to give up on a young player that they did draft so high as you're rebuilding with a young quarterback who's very talented? It's a very interesting dynamic here at play. But if he does end up being what the Eagles think he does, kudos to them for just continuing to bolster that offense. Let's go to Atlanta here, who continues to bolster their defense. We know the additions of Matthew Judon and Justin Simmons last week, and now we have a new second highest paid corner in the National Football League here with AJ Terrell. He was a first round pick for Atlanta in 2020. And what we said earlier was that it's not that he has necessarily earned this contract to this point, but they have a lot of belief, it seems, in what he can be.
Well, they must, because he's had no interceptions the last 2 years. Okay, he only has 4 career interceptions. Here's what's most alarming. He's only broken up 20 passes in the last 2 years. 20. Mm-hmm. He started in 31 games. So he never makes a play on the ball. And I think it's really hard to pay a corner who doesn't make plays on the ball. I think that's a real challenge. But to make him the highest paid player or the second highest paid corner when he can't produce interceptions, for me it's shocking, but it fits the profile of a Super Bowl winning franchise since this offseason has started.
We love this organization. He has agreed to a 4-year, $81 million extension, the guaranteed money sitting at $65.8 million. Again, the second highest paid corner now in league history. Also, we heard from Russell Wilson yesterday. He said he will be playing in this preseason game, which we talked about a little bit on the show yesterday that he probably should, especially considering the slow start with the calf injury. He did not perform well in his preseason debut last week. Mike Tomlin is expected to announce today the kind of division of labor and how he's going to lay things out. The Steelers went from a 3-point favorite to 6.5 in this preseason finale against the Lions, total 35.5. Most of the Lions starters are going to be sitting out, and they're just trying to get bodies healthy and through this week as well to start the regular season off right.
Okay, so you just laid it out perfectly. Say Russell plays good. Does that mean he's back? Are we going to read the highlights on Friday?
Playing or Detroit's Saturday backups. Russell's back.
Yeah, he just went against the Detroit backups and he played well. I mean, like, you know, look, he has to play, but so does the offensive line. And to me, this is where you get into a really gray area when you come to preseason, because what we'll see if Russell plays good and leads him on two drives for scores. Oh, Russ is cooking. He's back. Detroit's playing their backups. Mm. Detroit's just trying to get out of the game. They're just trying to get home. So, I mean, at this point, he needs to play. No question. No question. But yeah, I don't think you can read much into these evaluations.
I have some concern with the Steelers right now, especially with their starting center injured. If that offensive line doesn't hold up, you already have two quarterbacks as your options that hold on to the ball too long and take a ton of sacks. That just feels like a recipe for disaster. And now you've got the running back that's injured. This is a team I was trying to be excited about their talent.
I think I could rest. I think the one area that I think they're pretty good at, they love Zach Frazier. And Zach Frazier's a good player, the kid they drafted in the second round. So I think they can address that concern that you have because of the injury.
Okay.
However, that being said, the right tackle position is a disaster right now. And the left tackle, we're not sure either. So, you know, with Fatunu, can he come back and play? I don't know. But they're going to have to get this line back in order.
While that quarterback situation has yet to be resolved, although Russell Wilson is over a $3 favorite there, Justin Fields plus 300 to be the week one starter in Steelers country. Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce did make a decision there that it is Gardner Minshew. In terms of Friday's preseason finale against the 49ers, in addition to all of the starters sitting, they're also going to sit second string quarterback Aiden O'Connell. He will not play. So the 49ers now up from 3.5 to 7. Their total down from 35.5 to 32.5 as San Francisco is expected to play a handful of starters, including Brock Purdy.
Yeah, well, the San Francisco is trying to get their team going because they've had such a discombobulation of a preseason with all the injuries. Not the holdouts. The holdouts are separate, right? You know, the receiver and Trent Williams, that's separate. But this offensive line has had a lot of injuries. The receiving corps had a lot of injuries. Yeah. Wonderful to see Ricky Pearsall tonight. You know, Jacob Cowling was very good last week. He struggled to block. He missed a protection, but he looked like he had quickness and can play in the slot. So I'm anxious to see what they do offensively. Last week, when they played their number one receivers against the Saints' number one corners, number one receivers being who they had, the Saints' corners just ate him up. Brock Purdy had no place to throw the football. That was a real problem. But this week, I think it'll be a lot easier for him.
Yeah, Purdy 2 of 6 in the first quarter last week against the Saints. And because you did reference sort of no Trent Williams, Kyle Shanahan saying they are, quote, negotiating hard to get something done. Hey, he just doesn't want to work out in training camp. He's going to be ready to go and cover that left side.
I think so, Charmy. You got that one right. I think there's no question. I think this is just, look, I want to get on the regular season schedule. Yep. You know, if I come in tomorrow, I'll be in good shape.
I wanted to play, to close out this block, some fun sound for you, Michael, because you know Daniel Jones, one of my favorite players of all time. Sauce Gardner had some interesting words to say after the joint practices here. Take a listen.
He's a good quarterback. You feel me? I thought I was about to pick him off today. I had a little cloud rip. You know, he had looked at the last minute to try to throw the check down to Wandale. You know, I thought I had to pick, but he kept it. The competitive periods, it was very competitive, man. It was great. Like, I had fun out there today, you know. I don't really know what to say. Like,
for our radio audience, I'm a big body language person, and the fact that he had such a big smile on his face when he was saying it's competitive, and that he said he's having fun. I feel like that's pretty telling.
I think what he did was what we were taught in kindergarten, Stormy. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it. And I think he just was hum-da-da-hum-da-da-hum-da-da. I'm not going to say anything. He didn't have anything nice to say, so he didn't want to create a headline. And what he did was he created a headline by not saying anything. I mean, I think that clip there, if I were in the Giant organization, that clip would bother me more than if he came out and said, man, the guy ain't any good. Because he doesn't want to say it, but he said it.
I was cracking up the first time that I saw that earlier this morning. I was just like, he is trying so hard not to say something mean right now. Like, you can just tell. He's just, everything in his soul. He's like, it's competitive. We're having fun out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what we asked you. That's not what we asked you. Is any good? You won't answer. That's a non-denial denial.
Yep. The Jets defense, by the way, should have reason to be pretty confident right now, considering Aaron Rodgers has said this is one of the toughest training camps he's been a part of in the last 7 or 8 years. The defense has been playing pretty tight, high expectations for that side of the ball as well. And not as many injury concerns on that side of the ball as we have offensively. So that'll be a big part of what the Jets could do this year if they're going to have success. Season win total for New York, 10.5, and the other New York, 6.5. So you can tell the expectations a little bit different this year. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, I am particularly excited for today's No Way, No Doubt. I think I've got some good subjects for you. I put a lot of work into this, Michael, so get excited.
I love it. You always do. I appreciate you.
We will be right back. Do not go anywhere. No Way, No Doubt coming up after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Talking all things NFL and some college football as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Coming up in about 30 minutes, Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, where I'm broadcasting from. He's going to join us on the set for the final half hour of the program. Talk all things sign up contest weekend here at Circa as everybody's getting geared up for the Circa Survivor and Million contest. Remember as well, if you want to learn more about the contest, how it works, all the characters who enter, head to vsin.com/survivor. There you can also watch on demand episode 1 of the 5-part docuseries Circa Survivor, The Quest for 9.2 million. But it's about that time, ladies and gentlemen, for No Way and No Doubt.
Disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
All right, let's see if Michael and I are on the same page today with a couple of these items. Starting in Denver, Michael, no way or no doubt. Bo Nix could be the best rookie quarterback of this class. What do you think?
No doubt. No doubt, because he's got an advantage over everybody. He's got the play caller, the head of the company, the chief executive officer, the president behind him. He's got what we used to call at the Raiders sponsorship. When you have sponsorship by somebody who matters, you can go a long way. You can go a long, long way. And Sean's going to do everything in his power, everything, to make Bo Nix look good, so that Bo Nix is a good player and it justifies the 12th overall pick in the draft. Now, I don't think that Caleb Williams will not be a good player. I think he's going to be. He's got to protect the football better. I don't know what to think on Drake May. I'm anxious to watch Jaden Daniels. But in this draft class with 6 quarterbacks, we weren't sure there were going to be 6 quarterbacks picked. There were. And I think really all of them, with the exception of Penix, who's been on the shelf, I don't know what they've done with him. He's in witness protection in Lower Cape May, I guess. But all of them, 5 at least, look like they're going to be really good.
Bo Nix's offensive rookie of the year odds prior to week 2 of the NFL preseason were around 18-1. Currently 11-1. He's also +120 to lead rookie quarterbacks in passing yards this year, 3rd on the odds board. He was named yesterday officially the starter for week 1 in Denver. No way or no doubt, Michael, as we talk about all of these wide receivers trying to figure out their contracts, that all three of these big name wideouts, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Ayuk, and Ja'Marr Chase, will all be on the field with their respective teams week one.
No doubt. That's usually the trend. And the great George Young had a saying way back in the day when holdouts were more commonplace than they are today. Football players play football. And nobody wants to miss a game check unless your name's Hassan Riddick.
How, like, what are we up to now, Michael? What's that number?
I think we're getting to 4 million, Stormy. I mean, the meter's running. I mean, he's taking a cab from L.A. to New York.
He only makes 14.5. I get that's the point. He's trying to build it up, but my goodness, we
are cutting in. Yeah, that's 14.5 before Uncle Sam comes and gets his taste.
Preach.
You know, that's down to 7.5.
Preach.
So really, now he's got to send a check to the league office for $4 million. That's $4 million hard cash. Now he's looking at earning at $3.5 million.
You're giving me chest pains just thinking about
that. At his tax bracket, he's looking at a state home income of 1.75. I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I married an accountant. I know how it works.
Well, it sounds like Hassan Riddick needs a new financial advisor or CPA or something to help get through these trying times.
There's a no doubt for you. There's a no doubt.
Let's go to college football here quickly. No way or no doubt. The college football team under the most pressure to win a national championship this year is the Ohio State Buckeyes.
No doubt, right? Two things for Ohio State. Beat Michigan and play for the championship. Now, if they lose a championship game to Georgia or to someone else, I don't think the Buckeye fans are going to get upset. You lose to Michigan, no, they're going to be upset. You lose, you don't make it to the finals, they're going to be upset. Because anytime you put this amount of money into a team that Ohio State alumni have put into this team, they expect results.
Despite the ridiculous record that Ryan Day has built up at Ohio State, I'm 100% with you. The pressure is on for him and the Buckeyes this year, especially with the talent that they have, the coaches that they have brought in. They're plus 380 to win the Natty this year behind only the Georgia Bulldogs. Okay, I stand on this one something firm, Michael, and I want to see if you agree. No way or no doubt. People who get married during football season cannot get mad if their guests have their phones out watching the game. They cannot.
No doubt. Of course. I mean, that's, you know, you cannot. I mean, if you plan a Saturday wedding in October where we have 5 or 6 good college games and we live in a world today where, you know, you don't have to go to a sports bar or you don't have to go find a television. I mean, I can remember my parents made me, on a Sunday in September, go to the Italian Festival in Philadelphia when the Washington Redskins, and they were the Redskins at that time, were playing the Eagles. And I was a huge Washington fan. And literally, I ended up leaving the festival was on 9th Street. I literally was in somebody's living room that I didn't know watching the game. And, you know, my mother was looking for me and I hear him yelling out in the street. Like, that's rude. Like, I'm going to watch the game. And now that I can do it on my phone, it's easier.
Yeah.
It's like going to the beach on Saturday. You can take your phone with you and you can watch the games.
What's the, like, let's say this is it's playoff time, right? Your team hasn't been in the playoffs in forever and they are in. You have to decide between going to this wedding, either having your phone out at the wedding, doing that, or just like, you can't be around that type of energy. You need to be dialed in your own TV screen in your own area to watch this playoff game. How close do you have to be to that person to actually go to the wedding instead of watch the playoff game live? Like, does it have to be blood relative? Where are we at
here? I think it's a lot to do. You know, you got to deal with your wife or your significant other, whomever that is. So, you got to manage that. I think that's more than the wedding party, right? So, like, Millie would tell, put that phone away. You know, and all of a sudden I would have to go pee every 20 seconds because I'd be running to the bathroom, you know?
I love that. That's so good. The weekend, of course, in college football this year that has been making the rounds is that there's a special place in hell for people who are getting married on October 12th because you've got Ole Miss, LSU, Florida, Tennessee, Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, USC, and Texas OU, just to name a few. Okay. Back to the National Football League, Michael. No way or no doubt, the Dallas Cowboys will win another Super Bowl in Jerry Jones' lifetime.
Oh, that's a hard one. It's tough to say no way because, you know, I hope he lives for a long time. He's a wonderfully nice man. You know, and it depends on, I would say as it is right now, no way.
Oh, that's not what Jerry wants to hear.
What do you say on that? That's a hard one there. I'm not, you know, that's a hard one.
Michael,
let me just say this. History has proven since 1995 he's not been able to do it.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, the last time that they found themselves in that situation, I was 3 years old. So I have zero experience having seen it. And I'm a see it to believe it type of gal. What can I say? They are 7-1 to win the NFC, 19-1 in the Super Bowl odds. And that is a bet that I would not be touching with a 10-foot pole.
Me too.
No way or no doubt. It would be a mistake for the Steelers week one to start Justin Fields. That's been the talk of the town lately, is that Justin should be the guy. What do you think?
I don't think that, no way is that a mistake. I think Mike Tomlin's a seasoned coach, and I think all indications are that Russell, for lack of a better way, is a little gun shy. He's gotten hit too much, and his eye level's down. It's been down for 3 years. I think you have to believe what you see. Russell, it's like the boxers, you know. Somebody sent me this thing about Teddy Atlas. He talked about boxers. The last guy that knows the boxer career is over is the boxer. And I'm a little bit concerned that Russ can't cook. I don't think he's a line cook. I don't think he's a gourmet chef. And I don't even think he's working at Burger King anymore.
That is a damning critique, Michael.
The evidence is in my favor, Stormy.
You're not wrong.
For 3 years, even when they made that trade, when George Payton made that trade, you know, he was on the other side. His yards, he rushed for 120 yards that year. He didn't run. And his yards per attempt were coming down. Like, as Parcells would say, when a player shows you who he is, believe him.
No lies detected, Michael. Russell Wilson, by the way, -425 to be the week one starter out there in Pittsburgh. Fields, 3-1. Last one here, Michael. The Big 12 easily can have more than one team reach the CFP. The over-under number is 1.5. It's -140 to go under. You're getting plus money on the over. What do you think? No way or no doubt, two or more teams from the Big 12 can make the playoff.
No doubt. Yeah, I think the Big 12 is good this year. I really do. And I think they could make it. I mean, look, you know, Kansas State's good, right? We know Utah's good. Yeah. Oklahoma State, whoever knows with them. Hey, everybody's excited about West Virginia's team. Yeah, I would take that number.
I think there's, I get that it's kind of similar to the Pac-12 of old, where you think that because there's all this parity, it can be a dog-eat-dog type of conference and random upsets you don't expect. But there's a lot of talent on the upper echelon, like half of the Big 12. I think certainly at least two can make the college football playoff.
Yes.
We're going to hit the break. When we come back, VSiN's own Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa. He's going to join us live in studio.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Busy Thursday. Thanks for hanging out with us. Michael Lombardi out at his office in Jersey. Stormy Bonatoni live in downtown Las Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino as Mike Palm joins us live in studio. Palm's Pressing 3 coming up in about 15 minutes. But Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa, VSiN host, and a very, very chaotic schedule for this man over the coming days. I thought last week with the Blackjack Invitational that you had lot going on. No, that's nothing compared to this.
Piece of cake dealing with the likes of you and Jonathan Von Tobel. Compared to 50-50 radio stations / podcasts. You know, I offended the people in Houston. I offended the people in Baltimore. I offended the people in Kansas City. You can't win.
You already offended Michael in a commercial break, so that'll be fun to get to in a minute.
Well, we'll get to it on the other side of the break, Stormy.
Explain a little bit more about what's going on this week. Sorry, Michael, I thought you were going to jump in here. This is what's tough. People don't realize at home. There's a little bit of a delay between the studio and Michael out there in Jersey. And so sometimes we don't know who's going to
speak. It's very difficult.
I was going to wait to respond until I get asked the question that I think he's going to ask me later on. But I'm going to ask him a question
Valid
now.
Point.
How are we doing with the Survivor and the Millions? How's that coming along? And this weekend's a huge weekend. You've got a lot of celebrities and dignitaries in there.
Well, so Michael, I look at it where we are today versus where we were 2 days later, because of the leap year, we're off 2 days to the calendar. We have two less days in September, so go by days remaining to sign up for the contest. But it's also a little unfair for this year's number because you're counting the Thursday, Friday of sign-up week. sign-up weekend last year. So there's a little bit of noise. But look, we're down 11%. If you go strictly where we finished yesterday, the 21st, to where we finished the 23rd last year, in the millions, which I believe a better comparison will be when we get to Sunday. The end of Sunday, look where we're at. It'll probably be less than 5%. But I think we'll be a little bit down. And I think we'll be right around 5 million. And Derek's going to have to kick in $1 million. So maybe we should have done the documentary on the millions. Now, the survivor is doing very well, Michael. We're up 19%. Last year on the 23rd, we were at 2461. We're at 4740. We're at 5629. Think about that. If we do 11,000 entries, 11 million pool, we're at the halfway point right now, right?
That's crazy.
Which is 3.5 months and then, you know, less than 3 weeks left.
So do you think, and we've talked about it before, like how many entries really come in that final push, but do you think that the million contest is down because of how many people just see what Survivor is, that they think on the outside looking in, it's easy. They want to get all of these entries to have the big boom for your buck payout at the end of this thing. Like, is that why you think?
I think one of the challenges of the millions is that people look and say, first place pick 70% winners.
Yeah.
How can I pick 70% winners? These are professionals. But the more people you get, the higher the winning number is going to be. It's just a mathematical equation. The thing is that really, to me, is that you emphasize is there's 126 ways to win in Survivor. There's or in millions. There's one way to win in Survivor. You got to pick winners every week. Now, if you think that you need to get hot for 4 weeks, is there 1 4-week stretch where you can go 18-2? You're going to pick up six figures. The problem is it can't be the last 2 weeks of one quarter and the first 2 weeks of the other. You got to time it out right. But we give away $300,000 plus in every quarter.
That I've been through that, of like not to that level, but I've had a really, really good run for 3 weeks and you get excited and then it doesn't matter because the quarter's over and you're like, if I had one more week of doing this again, I would feel really good. But neither here nor there.
I think the other thing you got to do, Mike, don't you have to avoid the 1-4, 0-5s? If you avoid those, you're going to be, then you just need 3 to 4 weeks of really good. But the 1-4s, the 0-5s kill you. You can't overcome those.
I feel like the people that do well are like, you can't even go less than 3-2.
2 years ago, we had a tie. But whereas in Survivor, you split the money. In millions, we have tiebreakers for first place. So they had the identical record throughout the course of the year. And we go back to tiebreakers. It went to like the seventh tiebreaker, which was least amount of 1-4 weeks. And the one that got it only had 1 1-4-week all year, and the other guy had two. And that's what ended up being the tiebreaker.
That's a killer.
The guy that first, he had 1 1-4-week and 2 2-3 weeks, and everything else was like, you know, four. The most common was 4-1, 4-1, 4-1.
Okay, we got to talk about the documentary as well. Obviously, The Circus Survivor. Quest for 9.2 million, episode one of what will be a 5-part docuseries came out earlier this week on Monday. The next edition will come out this coming Monday. You can also watch these on demand on VSiN.com/Survivor to learn more about the contest and the documentary. But what have you thought of things so far as we kicked off the initial episode?
Well, so I was here the whole time. I mean, they've taped... Stephen and James, they taped almost every week of the entire year. And they started out in July because early you have to cast this big net and hope you pick up people that make it to the end so you can tell their story all the way through. But so I was interviewed over in a month after month after month, kind of recapping what were the storylines, what was going on, who were the characters. So I lived it from that experience. Then 2 weeks ago, Derek and crew, which I normally would have been a part of, previewed the first 3 episodes in his office. I was in Laughlin that weekend, so I didn't get to see it. I have seen the rough cuts of 4 and 5, which tells the ending
of
it.
You missed the middle.
I didn't know the first. So I went into it fresh. I watched it on YouTube TV Monday night. I went into it fresh. I thought it was really good. I was very impressed with it. And remember that first episode, they've got to sort of set the background because you want a wide audience. You're not going to understand what is Survivor. Mm-hmm. What is Circa? Mm-hmm. Who is Derek Stevens? Right? They've got to tell those stories. So I thought they did a really good job. Somebody I never met, so this is a spoiler for the next week. She didn't make it to the end. But the Sunday school teacher, that they had her like 3 times in that first episode, who teaches Sunday school and then comes for the 1:30 1:30 kickoff. She was a very interesting character that I didn't know from it. I thought the role of several people here at VSiN was very good, was very well done. I thought Gil was very good. Gil's a very good speaker. Gil was very good. I thought it was funny how they had Michael's favorite pro bettor, Bill Krakenberger, and Gil juxtapositioned early in the episode where Krakenberger saying, this is how you have to play it. And Gil saying, nobody knows anything. And then they joined together at the Italian-American club later in the episode. And then
how did they get in? They're not even Italian. How did both those guys get in? Well, the club? You know, I can't get in.
Crack,
and I'm Italian.
Crack has a lot of connections through his comps of betting the other people's money. But anyhow, what I want to say here is I thought there was one clear star from our network that did a great job as sort of being the narrator. We joke Pam, but Matt Brown. I thought Matt Brown, and with Mike Somich sometimes on his side, really recaps each week and tells the different storylines and where we're at and explains the contest. Mm-hmm. So he's a very key player in this.
Well, and that's the one thing, too, about this, because you have to think about how protective the NFL is about their rights. So you can't show the actual game footage, and it has to be.
You can't. You can just show reactions in the book.
Correct. So it's a very fine line of how you can tell that story and react to what happened without actually being able to show a highlight. And I think that they did a really nice job with that.
They did. And they did. I thought the graphics were good. I thought it was easy to follow.
And the explainers, as you mentioned as well, like what is a chop when we get to that?
But meanwhile, I mean, you think about this contest, there's multiple weeks when more than 50% of the entries get eliminated. It's really funny. I wish they would have taped a few years ago. They could have got Get Rich with Rich Bonatoni screaming at Derek Stevens about the rule about ties and how you're eliminated with ties. I mean, they could have had 30 minutes, their own episode of Rich discussing the rules with Derek.
Michael, you know this as well because I have complained about it, and it was I actually had to tell my dad when he came to town this past weekend for the Blackjack Invitational. I was like, Dad, if you see Derek Stevens, just do not bring up Survivor again. I can't take this. Love the man to death. But we had a paired entry. We only did one. The first year we did Circus Survivor. And we lost during that COVID season when the Steelers, we found out Big Ben had COVID and wasn't going to be playing after we had already submitted our entry. And they end up losing on a tie to the Lions. And my dad was very bitter because you're
very bitter.
Very bitter.
He called Derek everything but a white man.
Please.
Oh, it got ugly. Michael, it got ugly.
Michael, come on.
Well, I mean, I don't know how you can argue that a tie, you stay in the thing, that you're not eliminated. I have a hard time understanding that.
He wasn't mad about the tie. He was mad about the submission time when we had to do it when the teams hadn't announced all of their COVID
because
stuff.
Like 20 minutes after they entered their pick, then Roethlisberger's out. But if you move the deadline back, what are you going to have it? At kickoff at 9 a.m. on Sunday? I mean, you can't. There has to be a line in the sand. The entries have to be in at a certain time, but Rich wasn't hearing it.
Listen, I don't want to go back to that time, all right? It's a lot of pain that you're bringing back for me right now. I already signed up for a couple of my entries. I think I'm going to add in one more, but I'm in positive mode. So don't bring me back there, Mike. Why is he doing this to me? I thought we were friends.
I don't understand it, but he's got something in store for me. So we're going to find out if we're friends.
He's very bitter today. I don't know what's going on. Leave Rich Bonantoni out of this. He's healed. We've healed those wounds. We're going to take a quick time out here on the Lombardi Line. But when we come back, it is time for Palm's Pressing 3. And so Mike Palm has a few very serious questions that he's going to fire at Mr. Lombardi, which you will not want to miss. We'll be right back. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, let's jump right in. Mike Palm, Palm's Pressing 3. What do you got?
I want to shout out, first of all, a couple of our VSiN listeners and their kids are in a restaurant in Tyrone, Pennsylvania, watching the show right now. There's no volume, but they said give them a wave to recognize them. So to Scott and his son, we say hello. All right, Michael, I'm interested in this because you've been very effusive on your positive thoughts about Bo Nix recently, and maybe my recall isn't the greatest, but I never thought you were this high on Knicks during his five-year college career. What I do recall was you saying to Femi that his Heisman ticket was a St. Jude ticket on Bo Nix. I would ask, have you always been high on Bo Nix, or has this been the greatest conversion since Saul was headed to Damascus, changed his mind, changed his name, and became a prodigious letter writer?
Well, I don't think you can connect two things to the to one. So my my reaction to Femi was basically, the guy's out at Oregon. He's not going to win the Heisman. Everybody's asleep when he's playing live at 7:30 at Eugene. Nobody knows who he is. Nobody will understand him. People remember him from Auburn. So that was a separate issue. Never, and you can go back and listen to the pod, never said he wasn't a good player. Just said that. Now, I will admit, I never thought he would be a first-round pick. But what I think Stormy can validate for me is the fact that what I have been effusive in terms of praise is the combination of the two. First of all, on draft day, sitting right where you are, we were very strong about six quarterbacks going in the first round. We predicted Knicks would go 12 to Denver. And that love affair between Sean Payton and Bo Nix is what I am really talking about. And it lends itself down a road that is more about team building, it's about scouting, than it is about a love affair for Bo Nix. The point I'm trying to make is you need a connectivity. You need a coach and a personnel guy to see the game, to understand what the positions needed for the qualifications for the position, and how you're going to develop, and how are you going to enhance the player's performance. And I think Sean dots all those I's. He crosses all those T's. And that's why I've been so high on Bo Nix. That's why I felt like he would always start for Denver. And I have tremendous respect for Sean Payton going back to when we first hired him in Philadelphia, when he was driving his car from Northwestern to Maryland to take an assistant coaching job, and we diverted him to Philadelphia to hire him as John Gruden's assistant. So I believe in him as a coach, and I believe in his ability to develop talent. And it goes back to a line that I've often said on this network. I've said it on my podcast. Very few people can coach a quarterback, and even fewer can evaluate him. And I've always said Sean Payton is one of those guys that fit.
I want to follow up on that, a question about Payton. How much of Drew Brees was Sean Payton, and how much of Drew Brees was Drew Brees? He was 21 and 11 his last 2 years with the Chargers before he went to the Saints.
Yeah, I think what he did for Drew was enhance Drew, right? Now, remember, I know he was 21-11, but remember, he got beat out by Doug Flutie at the Chargers. You're right. And again, and this lends itself to the whole essence of this conversation, is sometimes we judge quarterbacks because guys that can't coach them are coaching them, and they get lost in the shuffle, and they get told poorly. Look, let's take Mac Jones, for example. Mac Jones was rookie of the year, took a team to the playoffs with Josh McDaniels. With Matt Patricia and Billy O'Brien, he was a disaster with a capital D, right? He was a disaster. You can blame a lot of different things, but there's evidence that he was good with Josh, and there's no evidence that he was good. Now, he may be good with Doug Peterson. I don't know. But I think that position, more than any, that's why I don't want Drake May to start. I want Drake May to learn and grow so he doesn't get off on the wrong foot. Because I think that coaching staff, the decision-making in New England is problematic, and I've seen it happen too many times around the league.
To your point, I'm going to keep going down and beating this question. To your point about the quarterback-coach combination, evaluate the one in Dallas with McCarthy and Dak.
See, that's a good one, because I think Mike can coach the quarterback. Mike's got a high win percentage. He's won a Super Bowl. Mike's qualifications as a coach, no one at our network would agree with this. They would think I'm crazy. But Mike has the credentials to get himself into the Hall of Fame by wins. Now, you could say, well, that was Aaron Rodgers. Well, okay, that was Aaron Rodgers. But all you guys, especially people at our network that are in the analytical world that think Kellen Moore's the greatest coach since Curly Lambeau, he had a better year with Mike McCarthy coaching than he did with the great Kellen Joystick Moore. Mike McCarthy understands how to coach a quarterback. Put Rich Gannon on this network and ask him who he thinks is one of his best coaches that he's ever had. He'll answer Mike McCarthy. People will laugh when he says it, but that's what he'll say. So I think, to me, Mike gets a bad rap. Mike has a media thing. Now, is Mike a good game manager? No, I'm not ready to go there. Is Mike an elite decision maker when it's crunch time? Not ready to go there. But offensively, you cannot argue with that Dallas performance last year. Plus 124 in the first half, been able to play from in front. I think they were pretty good.
Michael, I thought that Kellen Moore was the best leader since George Halas. I thought, so we changed it up.
Well, he could, you fill in the Vince Lombardi, George, fill in anything. He's the greatest coach in the history of coaching. We know this. They'll all tell you that. The people that look at spreadsheets will tell you that. Just like they were telling me and Mike Palm that Trey Lance is going to be a superstar, a generational talent.
All right,
you heard that, Stormy.
Oh, don't remind me.
All right, let's go to question two. And three might not make the docket.
We got 4 minutes.
Might have to hold
let's
it
go.
Off.
I've got to crank
I think
through
this
these.
Is a very interesting exchange between Tua and Brian Flores this week. By the way, I think Tua is totally out of line to use terms like a bad person, bad human being.
Terrible. But
Brian Flores took the high road, it would be described as. But how much of Brian Flores taking the high road is the current hamstring position he is in with the NFL, Michael? Remember in Miami, they wanted him to tank for the number one pick. Really, they wanted him to tank so they could fire him and bring in Brady and Peyton. Once that got out, he sued the NFL. And since the lawsuit hasn't gotten a snip of an interview for any of these head coaching positions, what is Brian Flores's, the ultimate question here is, what is Brian Flores' ultimate future in the NFL? And does he ever become a head coach again?
I think he could, because he is a good coach. And I think it is. I agree with you. It was unfair that Tua had to go air his dirty laundry. If he has a problem with Brian, call him and talk to him on the telephone. You don't have to do it on Dan Lebatard's show. And so, look, I think I know Brian. Brian's a really good coach. I thought what Brian did is take the high road. But what I thought was more impressive is all those Viking players standing behind him. I thought that. Now, let's put things in perspective. Brian has a better record than Mike McDaniel does as a head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Say whatever you want. Mike McDaniel's 3-9 down the stretch. He's 4-10 in the last 7 games in both seasons.
All right, we'll get to my third question.
But let's not let facts get in the way of it, Mike.
But I do agree with both of you on the Tua side of it. I feel like those are comments that you make off camera. And even if you are talking to media people, it's like, hey, this is, you know, between us, but this is how things really went down. That's not something you say in that platform.
Third question is about one of your favorites, Kyler Murray, here. And someone asked me, Michael, who's the biggest team that's under the radar in the NFL this year? And I did a little soul searching, and I came up with the answer, the Arizona Cardinals. Because, one, they're totally ignored in that division. You have a 2-time defending NFC champion. You've got Sean McVay. You've got the new-look Seahawks. And here's Arizona. You've got Kyler healthy the whole the whole preseason. One thing he's good at is the deep ball. Top three in efficiency, accuracy, throwing the deep ball the last 3 years in the NFL. And you add Marvin Harrison. I think their tight end is really good. They picked up some pieces on defense. And maybe most importantly, a second full year of Jonathan Gannon as head coach. Your outlook on the Arizona Cardinals, Michael?
I think this is a make or break year for Kyler because he's trending in the wrong direction. Yards per attempt down the field. For a guy that is really good at throwing it down the field, it doesn't translate to yards per attempt. Now, in fairness to Kyler, he's coming off the knee. Last year, it doesn't really count. But the year before, it does. And so I think this is going to be a year where if he can make those beep-beep plays, watch out. If people rush him like they have been rushing him lately in the pocket and keeping him as a quarterback who has to play under center in the pocket and he can't escape, that's a problem. But I do think the way Petsick called games last year, James Conner deserves a Purple Heart for gaining 1,000 yards behind that offensive line. So I like the team offensively. I like Petsick as an offensive coordinator. I think they have improved. It'll be an interesting year, but it's going to come down to, can Kyler make throws down the field?
Well, and they were like, everybody went into last season thinking very openly that they were going to be far and away the worst team in the National Football League. And then they were actually really competitive in a number of games. Once Kyler Murray did get back into the fold, they won some games.
Survivor week one, the whole field was on the Commanders and they escaped.
there were a few sweats involving this Arizona team. They are 13-1.
The game in Houston
in
was
NFC
a great
West.
Game. If you go back and watch it, the Cardinal game against the Texans, one of the best games of the whole year.
Fun show, guys. Good luck the rest of this weekend, thanks. My friend.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Michael Lombardi.
Thank you, Stormy.
That's a wrap for the Lombardi Line. Sharp Money coming up next.